Hello, welcome to the Common Geeking Program. It's like a book club, but even nerdier. Each episode, we have a topic that four people will discuss from their own perspectives in geek culture. With us, we have...
Hi, I am Keenan Kurish, and my domain this time will be Leica Studios, specifically...
Wait, can we put the audio of, can we put the audio of Pat laughing about it back in there?
Yes, we can.
Specifically.
Specifically.
Okay. Okay. My name is Colin Ketchin. This week I will be representing the domain of Minecraft Story Mode, not your grandfather's Minecraft.
And I'm Jeff, and this week I will be repping Wes Anderson Films. He's a pretty cool guy.
I like how specific you got it. Shows a lot of effort on your part.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't want to talk about just one. They're basically all the same film.
Are they like the Pringles of movies?
They're just like, if I'm talking about stylistic elements, they're all relevant in the same way. And to limit myself to one movie would just be limiting the examples that I could give. I'm not talking about the story, which is the only difference in Wes Anderson movies.
Not even the actors change.
And I'm your host, Taimul Chowdhury, or Chatter, whichever you prefer. And this episode's topic is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and visual storytelling, where the main subject will be the movie adaptation, Scott Pilgrim comic books. I'll be referring to the comic books from time to time, but for the most part, we'll be discussing the movie. So if you want to pause the video and watch the movie, go on ahead. We'll wait.
Yeah, just take a quick 2-hour break while you're riding that train to work. Okay, now we have to sit here. We have to sit here for about 2 hours while they watch the movie.
Yeah, it would be rude not to.
So we're just going to sit here and make commentary on the movie and pretend we're watching at the same time. What if we did that sometime, though, where we do commentary on a movie by our memory and then sync it up to the real movie so that we'll be making comments. They will only sometimes relate to what's going on the screen.
This part, I don't know what scene this is, but like it's pretty good. I really enjoyed it. I think he's hot. I don't know if this is the right scene or not.
But if we're on that scene, it's pretty cool.
It's a way better podcast than what we're doing.
I'd probably be like looking through the comics, so at this point they're probably doing this thing. But then like around the time they get to the second evil ex-boyfriend, it all changes. And I'm like, well, I don't know what's going on now.
Yo, this is fucking weird and out of order. Why did the evil ex-boyfriend start fucking threatening him before he's even dating Ramona?
It felt weird.
It makes sense when you like get to the final volume and it's like, you find out why they even formed in the first damn place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to get there throughout the process of recording.
Alright, summary, let's go. So Scott Pilgrim is your classic love story. Guy meets girl, they hook up. Guy then has to fight her evil exes so that he can pursue a relationship with her. A tale as old as time.
You just skipped poor Knives Chow. You skipped all of the poor girl who got dumped over the whole movie. Do you not care about
her
Knives?
Her stories is even sadder in the comic books.
Yeah, it's because she's not as annoying in the comics.
But Chowder, I don't think you could say they hooked up because like nothing happened. They like kissed kind of like three times, and then like he could have had sex, and then he chose not to. Which I don't know why you wouldn't.
Listen, the amount of people I've kissed three times and not have sex with is higher than it should be.
Anyways, Scott Pilgrim is at its core a coming-of-age story about a loser named Scott Pilgrim as he pursues a relationship with the literal girl of his dreams, Ramona Flowers. The main twist is that he takes...
And he's a f***.
Yeah, he's a huge f***.
Complete douchebag. I should have mentioned that.
Well, that's like the twist on the coming-of-age story, right? It's just like... Usually you want to have a likable character, but they give you Scott Pilgrim, who's just the fucking worst.
He is. Yeah, he has more charisma in the comics, but even then, still.
Michael Cera was perfect.
Well, I don't know. Now that I'm reading this, he's kind of a different kind of in the comics. Like, Michael Cera is like an awkward, but he's just a in the comics.
Yeah.
Well, so Cera, he dates this high school girl. And then kind of stops giving a shit when Ramona walks by because, like, he has a dream about her. And she's like, wow, she's super hot. And then he finds out she's real. And then he has to break up with his fake high school
but
girlfriend.
But not before cheating on his fake high school girlfriend, which is just, yeah.
Hashtag.
Although, in his defense, it was the girl of your dreams. That would be a little off-putting. If I dreamed about a girl I'd never met, and then all of a sudden she existed, I'd be super wigged out.
Yeah, that's fair, Keenan, but that might be a cue to break up with your fake high school girlfriend, but not to cheat on her.
Yeah, I would then break up with girlfriend, but like...
Yeah, good old subspace shenanigans there. So
stop mentioning that in the movie and not telling us what it does. You're just like, oh, subspace highway. I'm like, what the
again,
fuck is that?
Again,
don't worry about it.
Much more significant in the comic book.
Apparently, there's just doors in the movie, and you're like, wow, what's that? It's like, it's the highway. It's like, you can't fit a highway in a closet.
Highway in a closet.
If there was a door with a star on it, you don't put that on actual doors besides closet doors. Come on.
So the main twist of Scott Pilgrim is that it takes place in a fictional form of Toronto that runs on video game logic. What does this mean? It means people blow up into a shower of coins when they're defeated. There are boss fights, leveling up, one-ups, all that lovely brew of stuff that comes with video
games.
Wait,
is that why no one thought it was significant? That people burst into coins? Oh my god, that makes so much sense!
It is. It's definitely the big selling point that both the comics and the movies work on, and
yeah, I never thought that other people didn't freak out about it.
It's really interesting because the comic is a comic that has a video game aesthetic, but then when it gets translated into the movie form, the movie mm-hmm. plays off of not only the video game aesthetic but also mm-hmm. the comic aesthetic. So it's got like three forms of media that it's playing with, and mm-hmm. I think that's what really makes it unique in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely. And like the way it handles transitions and camera pans, it's all done to like mimic the feel of the comic panels and the dynamic artwork that Brian Lee O'Malley does. And while the two stories, the comic and the movie, at one point diverge, I'd say it's still one of the more faithful adaptations because it works so hard to recreate a feel, and it very much they take different roads to get to the same place.
So Chowder, when you picked this for a conversation, you said you wanted to focus on the visual stuff, like. And I'm just asking because in my domain and in the discussion, I have some serious counterpoints to what you've presented, and I'm going to have fun. I just kind of want to dig into, since we're in the summary, like, you wanted to talk about how the visuals and the aesthetics, and now we know, like, what it encompasses, how that influences the story. What are, like, your prime examples of that in the movie? Because you're saying the comics a lot, and I didn't read the comics.
What I want to just sum up all of it is that the visual language helps to do three things. First, it creates metaphors for Scott's journey. One up is a sign of rebirth, the swords coming out of his chest as a way of, gaining emotional maturity. And
I just want to say that I really, really respected the power of self-respect. Like, I really, not only was that super funny, because I didn't expect it, but I also, like, it was a solid point. It's like, love! But you want to know what's better than love? Loving yourself. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Solid point, movie. By the way, you have better stats. Sort of self-respect.
Scott earned the power of self-respect.
Second, it's also a subversive act. Scott acts like he's a video game protagonist.
Oh.
He does. He does things for his own sake. His sense of morality seems very centered. He's
what sense of morality?
Hmm?
I said, what sense of morality?
Like, think about it. Link in Legend of Zelda will go around stealing stuff and never faces consequences for it. Video game protagonists have a tendency to do awful things and then kind of expect to not face consequences for that. And here's Scott Pilgrim. Whenever he acts like a video game protagonist, he fails at what he tries to accomplish. When he acts like a grown adult, he succeeds. And
I would not have thought of that. Are you saying this movie is telling me to not be a child and play video games? Because I resent that.
No, actually, I'd say, and that segues into my third point. I'd say the movie is fine with video games, just in a certain light. Both the movie and the comic have another running theme of learn from your mistakes. If you make a mistake, don't forget about them. Learn from them and fix them. It's why one-ups appear throughout the movie and the comics. It's why the last line in the comic is, so, shall we try again? It's why the movie ends with, continue. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It actually started at the number 9, not at the number 5, so that's really important.
Oh, not at the number 9. And, like, and think about video games. What is the big lesson that a lot of gamers learn from video games. It's
hack the network.
It's do it again. No matter how many times you fail, you do it again. You learn from your mistakes, do it again. And that's a lesson that Scott learns in both the movie and the comics. And, you know, and the movie looks proudly on that.
Wow, can we get more of a segue than that?
Keenan, go! Keenan, go! Fuck! Ah! I'm so awkward! Where am I going? That's fine. Alright, guys. Hello. It's me, Keenan, again. I am talking about Leica Studios, and I am going to particularly talk about Coraline and how it influenced, and how the style of Leica influences their movie making. And what I always found, for those of you who don't know, Leica Studios is a stop motion, well, predominantly a stop motion animation studio. They've actually only done a few films. You probably have heard of them because they're so small. There's Kubo and the Two Strings is their most recent.
Oh, that was them? Holy shit.
Yeah, the Box Trolls, Coraline.
Didn't Tim Burton also work on Coraline?
He was a producer. He wasn't like...
Oh, he was a producer? Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Paranorman.
And, you know, I find it interesting because, you know, a lot of what stop motion animation has been building on is Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. And a lot of Leica's film relies on an audience that is familiar with A Nightmare Before Christmas, and that's incorporated into their visuals. You know, Coraline is very gothic looking. Even Paranorman uses the iconography of horror movies.
Yeah, they also did work on The Corpse Bride, and that's their most recent stuff. Those are those most recent big movies anyway. They've done other things, but I really want to focus on their stop motion and how that affects the storytelling. What it really does, what's really cool first about like any sort of stylized telling, is two things that I really like. And it's cool that you bring up Tim Burton, because stylized storytelling kind of like lets you know who the movies is. Like, looking at some of the, like, Paranorman and Coraline, you can tell it's a Leica film because of the style of the animation and also, like, some of the art style, which is different but also very similar because it's all made by the same people, you know? So, like, that's always really cool to have that kind of ownership.
Yeah, as someone who didn't grow up watching Nightmare Before Christmas, when Corpse Bride and, like, Paranorman and all this, I thought it was all the same people. I had no idea it was a separate thing.
Well, Corpse Bride and Nightmare Before Christmas are both Tim Burton.
They're both Tim Burton, yeah, but again, I know he was a producer on that.
Not exactly.
No, I mean, Tim Burton was the director. Like, Tim Burton wrote and directed Corpse Bride and Nightmare Before Christmas. He produced Coraline, yeah.
What was I also was saying is that they also did a lot of work. They also did a lot of work for production work for Corpse Bride. The other thing that I find really cool about stylized storytelling is also, at least in the case of like things like Leica, is it holds up over time. Because if you make an animation and try to make it look real, eventually technology will move on, and also the human psyche is designed to look for flaws, and also if things look too perfect, it looks bad.
That explains why I have such a hard time looking at your face.
Oh, that hurts.
Because it's too perfect?
Yeah, damn, son. Oh, accidental compliment! I'll take it.
Oh my god!
Sick burns!
Actually, Keenan, I have opinions on this.
Real quick, I just want to say that
finish your sentence.
Really, I just want to say that it really holds up because it never doesn't look like itself, which I find really cool. 10 years? No, what I mean is 10 years from now, like if you look at like the animation for like Clue in Tron Legacy, it looks old now, right? At the time, it looked really cool, but now it's like, ugh.
Tron Legacy, at the time, about halfway through the movie, they ran out of budget for young Jeff Bridges. So that had its own problems. It aged during the movie.
Yeah, but what was really cool about Leica Studios is that when it looks like a style, it will always look like it's in that style because it's not trying to look real.
I think the other thing about it, Keenan, that makes it so wonderful is that when you watch something like that, that kind of visual makes it so, so obvious how much work was put into it. It's like seeing a full painting as opposed to like a photograph taken on an iPhone, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It could be the same image, but you know one of them was gone over like inch by inch and the other one was just found.
Yeah, like that makes me think of when I was watching Kubo and the Two Strings, right? At the end, they actually like show the process behind making one of the scenes, and oh my god, like when I saw that, my jaw dropped and I'm like, holy shit, holy
shit. I have watched the behind the scenes of The Nightmare Before Christmas like 4 or 5 times. It is so cool. But anyway, to pull that back, I think this relates a lot to Scott Pilgrim, actually, because not that standard filming techniques don't have a lot of work put into it. Of course they do, right? But what Scott Pilgrim really does is that since every single scene and every single shot has so much like detail and precision into it and little references added everywhere, since that stuff is so noticeable, it really highlights how much work was put into that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It feels so rich. Yeah,
I was going to agree with you, Jeff, because like the garbage can during the vegan fight scene has the 3 on it. And whenever he fights an X, the number that X is referenced in like a bunch of weird small ways. I think it's really cool. But also with stylized stuff like Leica, there's just effects that you can have. Because if you have a different style, you can't necessarily do things that other styles can. So for like stop motion, you get that kind of feel of stop motion. And the other thing is also like crawling through, like Coraline crawling through the door to get to the other mother in the other world. That's something you can't really recreate in a different style, because that style has very particular looks to itself. And you can't really do that with other things.
Yeah, it's definitely something to be admired, the craftsmanship that goes into these styles. And so we'll go from something complicated and very visually intensive to something that relies on simplicity and or letting the viewer create their own vision.
Speaking of going from something complex to something simple, let's go from a movie to a video game. Psych, that's backwards! Oh my god! So I decided to talk about Minecraft story mode.
Can we just pause for a sec? Did you just take Chowder's segue and then before he stopped saying it, say, oh, speaking of that, let's talk about my thing, when that was the segue he was kind of make? Did you just fucking steal Chowder's segue?
That's probably exactly what I did. Audio evidence.
I knew exactly
confirm.
Where he was going, and it's just like, it's clear that he's leading up to talking about Minecraft, and then you're like, oh, speaking of this thing that sounds like Minecraft.
You're a piece of shit. You, like, knocked that poor kid right off the segue. Yeah.
And, of course, I'll probably be keeping this in.
Oh, no! No! All right.
Anything that makes Colin looks like a piece of shit should be left in. Well, I don't know. That would be quite a lot of material. Hey.
All right, so Minecraft Story Mode is a Telltale game series. Telltale Games has a whole slew of point-and-click adventures that are based on other IPs. Minecraft, obviously a very popular kind of open adventure construction survival game. Minecraft Story Mode puts a story in it by taking that world and repurposing it, so you're not playing in the normal game, you're playing this reduced version that is focused on narrative. Now, the Telltale games are known for having unique narrative structure where the choices you make influence the story. You could make a choice in episode 1 that kills someone in episode 2, and that change lasts
for
the
whole... Or episode 1.
Help!
Jesse!
Please.
Are you going for Ivor or Petra?
Or episode 1, or you can make a choice that immediately kills somebody, and it's just, that's the rest
that's
of the game for you.
That's always really awkward, I just want to say, because mm-hmm. I played The Walking Dead with friends, and like one of the times they're like, do you take the shot? I was like, take the shot, and they missed, and the guy like killed one of their friends. I was like, ooh, shouldn't have taken that shot, man. Should have listened to me.
All right.
That was dumb.
So what I wanted to focus on here is... As a point-and-click adventure game, it's kind of reductive. The actual mechanics to interact are reduced. There are a lot of things in the game where it's like, in Minecraft, you can build a bunch of stuff. In Minecraft Story Mode, you press A over and over again, and the game builds it for you. So, like, it's not the same thing. But you have, like, 4 dialogue choices in all conversations. Some are serious, some are not. But there are also these little things. Whenever you make a choice, like when Kenan had everyone murder that person... whenever you do that, it gives you a little thing up in the corner that says, like, this person will remember this. Like, they're going to remember what you did.
Real quick. That's the most passive-aggressive game mechanic I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like...
And the way it presents dialogue choices, it gives you a snippet, and then you say, like, maybe it says, like, something that you think is going to be really nice, and then you push the button and say, I'm going to say this nice thing. And then the character says the fully developed version of that thought, and it's so mean. And I'm just like, no, I didn't want to be an asshole. And then it's like, they're going to remember that you hate them forever. And I'm like, I don't. And it affects the rest of the story. So
that's sort of like when Scott Pilgrim talks. He's just like, oh, I'm not going to be an asshole. And then he's just like the fucking worst.
Yeah.
I gotta pee on her. I mean, I gotta pee.
And with Minecraft story mode, it does something where in the story of the game, some guy creates something called a wither storm, which is not actually in the game. It's a liberty they take with story mode. And it goes crazy. And your main character is Jesse. If you play the guy, it's voiced by Patton Oswalt, so highly recommend. He has a pig named Reuben.
What?
Who's awesome. I love that pig.
That's great.
And then Axel and Olivia and some other people. And as the game goes on, your relationships really deepen with these people. And Reuben in particular is like, when everyone hates you, is your go-to guy, your go-to pig. And in the final part of the game, or the fourth episode out of eight, but like the main story ends at episode four, you're fighting the Witherstorm, you kill it, but Reuben dies and turns into a little pork chop.
Come on, Reuben, say something.
Because that's what happens when you kill a pig in Minecraft, is they turn into a pork chop.
Oh, wait, that's what happens? I didn't know that. Spoiled again. God damn it.
Hey, look, man, if every pork chop were perfect,
we wouldn't have hot dogs.
So the big thing about this is when Reuben died, it said up in the corner, like, you have to say some stuff to people. Up in the corner where it says they will remember that, it says Reuben will be remembered.
Reuben, don't do this to me. I need you, boy.
And it fucking got me. And the reason I wanted to compare this is because when looking at visual storytelling in Scott Pilgrim, I started noticing some stuff like the aspect ratio tightens. So black bars come up on the top and bottom, which is typical of action movies, but this movie uses that in and out. And it uses it in two places, fights sequences and dream sequences. And
Like in the desert, yeah.
Yeah. The reason this made me think of Minecraft story mode is it's this really meta thing that ultimately doesn't totally affect the story, but really affects your perception of it by playing to these larger ideas. Like, if they just had a character say, Reuben will be remembered, that is less effective than the game breaking the fourth wall and saying that. And I forget a lot of the story that happened in Minecraft story mode. I went through and reread it for this. I'm never going to forget that. That was a great little moment.
Alright, so now we're going to go from Minecraft story mode to the works of a director who has a very visually distinct style.
Alright, so Chatter, are we about to talk to Wes Anderson, or do we have to settle for Jeff?
Unfortunately, we got to settle for Jeff.
How the cuss should you qualify for this?
Oh, right, Rooney. I'm talking about Wes Anderson. So the main reason that I wanted to compare Wes Anderson is because, like, he is a director, which is, I'm going to sound super pretentious for saying this, but this is actual film term. He's what's referred to as an auteur.
Wow, you are so pretentious.
So pretentious.
I love you, but you don't know what you're talking about.
Basically just French for author. But for some reason, the French word for author got coined as this term of directors who have such a specific style that it's like, when you watch that movie, like, boom, you know exactly who directed it. And Wes Anderson is one of those directors. But anyway, like, another good example of a director who is in this category is, like, Quentin Tarantino, right? You know a Quentin Tarantino film when you see one.
Yeah, because it has Sam Jackson in it.
Exactly. That actually legitimately is another trope with these directors, is that they also have a very common cast of actors that they use. Like, Wes Anderson usually has, like, Bill Murray.
Yeah, actually, like, God, Pilgrim vs. the World was directed by someone you could consider an auteur, too. Yeah, Edgar Wright. While that reusing of actors isn't present in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, it's definitely prevalent in his other works that involve
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Nick Frost.
Yeah.
Nick Frost.
In Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. Yeah, The World's End.
But so, like, and for another point of connection here, another actor that Wes Anderson frequently uses is Jason Schwartzman, who is the actor who plays Gideon in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He's like almost, except for this, I've only seen him in Wes Anderson movies.
That's mean. Patrick Schwartzman is great, though.
I'm in a geeking program throwing shade at Jason Schwartzman. Step up.
No, I love Jason Schwartzman. I'm just saying.
We heard you. Yeah, that's right, Jason Schwartzman. Call us. 5 o'clock. Catch me outside.
So, like, I just wanted to pick one of these directors who has such a specific style because, like we were talking about earlier when we were talking about Keenan's Domain, right? The style is so specific and it's kind of contrary to what a lot of us are taught when we're learning film techniques. Like, something that Wes Anderson does is a lot of his scenes are really, really symmetrical. And that is just something that you don't do in filming a lot. You usually will have it, like, you know, look more natural, because to make it very symmetrical is to point out the fact that there is a camera pointed at the scene instead of having it hide the camera effects and just focus on the story.
Or make everything really yellow or orange. Whoa!
Yeah, exactly. Like, common color palettes. Like, Tim Burton does that a lot, too. Like, I'm pretty sure Nightmare Before Christmas was limited to a palette of, like, gray, black, and orange.
Whoa, you forgot about, like, really, really gray blue. Come on, classic Tim Burton.
You gotta put a sound clip in there of Lego Batman going like,
I only work in black, and sometimes very, very dark gray.
Yeah, I think it's a commonality that like these auteurs find ways to break the rules and get away with it. It's sort of a mark of master filmmakers, and I think Edgar Wright also like calls attention to the fact that pointing a camera at things when he makes his movies. Scott Pilgrim especially, where all these visual effects, the way the camera pans, the way the camera edits itself. No, the camera is almost a character in its own right, helping to convey
its own Edgar Wright.
Shut up. I fucking hate you. I hate you so much. Get leave.
You'll pay for your crimes against humanity!
Now that we've introduced our domains, let's move on to the discussion. The first question I want to ask is, what are these domains using their language for? In Scott Pilgrim's case, what is it using video game and comic book language for? And, you know, to put it simply, why do they look the way they do?
So basically, like, not just, like, how do they do it, but what's the purpose, right? Like, what kind of message are they trying to convey?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would say, like a studio is commonly one of the things, because they're also sort of limited by the style of stop motion. So they're always going to look like they're stop motion. There's not a lot they can do about it. Although recently they started like putting CGI mixed in, which could be really nice. They're not quite all the way there with CGI, but like their stop motion's still on point. However, I would say the thing that like the visuals for Leica does is it world builds. Like, damn.
You sound like you check it out Leica's fat ass. Sculpted
like watching
play.
Kubo, it's got a whole Sam Zaddy. Yeah, it's like there's a whole village. It makes it look really interesting. What I like is that they sometimes try to incorporate visuals from their source material. Like for Corpse Bride, while it was like a lot of Tim Burton, a lot of it is also like very gothic looking, which is normally Tim Burton, but also it's also kind of distinctly not Leica a little bit. It's more Tim Burton, but they still incorporated that. In Paranorman, it looks like, you know, everyone looks kind of like a horror movie stereotype. And so I find that to be really
That's a good
cool.
point, Keenan, because I know, like, in Corpse Bride, like, all the characters' bodies are shaped what they are. Like, the fucking guy, the town crier who is, like, always ringing a bell, his body is shaped like a bell. And I'm just like, so did you just know that you were going to get into this profession because of how you were born, or did you get some sort of plastic surgery?
Yeah, no, and like the priest is also like, he has a bent back like his crook.
That's some real pigeonholing right
you
know, there.
I also like, one of the things I liked about like Corpse Bride in particular is that dichotomy between the dead and the living. The dead were colorful and alive, and that was really cool. That really sent their message home.
Well, and to contrast that, the living are dead, because the living are all gray. Yeah.
with Telltale in general, the Telltale games all have a very, what's called cel-shaded style, which is where 3D objects have a thick, dark outline when they're rendered, much like a comic book.
It's sort of like Borderlands, too, right?
Well, yeah, they've done a Borderlands game. They've done a Borderlands game. It looked just like the original stuff, which is kind of cool, but some of their main IPs, Walking Dead was a comic, Wolf Among Us was the comic Fables, and there are a couple other examples of that. Minecraft Story Mode is really one of the exceptions, where they just basically took assets straight out of Minecraft and built it into this larger thing. I guess I had to focus a bit less on how Telltale normally has a unique style, like you guys are focusing on with films, and I I guess what stood out to me about Minecraft Story Mode is that what it's really doing is using game mechanics to tell a story, or using contrast with the source material to tell a story. So, like, their trademark style doesn't necessarily show through in, like, the game world, but their unique way of telling story definitely does. It was the first game in the series to, like, break the fourth wall with that Reuben will be remembered thing. But those games, I played almost all of them, and they always stand out to me because they're in.
I was just going to say that I find Telltale games to, in their visuals, but also in, like, in their storytelling, it's very impactful. And I think one of the reasons why it's so impactful is because it looks like a comic book. So you really, like, it's kind of like how the way you can hear about something terrible and, like, you don't really react to it, but you'll read about something terrible, like, in a book or something, and really, like, feel it. And so, like, I feel like that's the same way with, like, comics, and they kind of steal that for their animation.
I just realized much of what Telltale does can be comparable to what Edgar Wright did with Scott Pilgrim. Telltale is trying to recreate the comic book style of storytelling in their medium, much like how Edgar Wright tried to do with his movie. As for, like, the way Minecraft Story Mode looks, much of it is carryover from, you know, the source material, but I think that because everything looks so simplistic, everything looked like a really souped-up Nintendo 64 kind of thing, it lets the audience project better onto what they see, you know? So its very style is like a Rorschach. You see what you want. I'd go as far to argue that if Minecraft had looked better, I'm doing air quotes here, if it looked more realistic, it wouldn't have been nearly as successful.
Yeah. There have been other games like that. Like that fucking, that game that Eddie keeps trying to get us to play, that 7 Days to Die or whatever it's called, it's very similar to, he showed me how it works and I like watched a Let's Play. It's like pretty similar to Minecraft in its mechanics, but it's got more realistic graphics, and that it's kind of off-putting because like Minecraft has like such a Lego aesthetic, you know? And that's what it is you build a world. So you want it to look like fucking building blocks.
All right. So my next question is, why use these visual metaphors? Why use this visually stylized way of telling a story, as opposed to something more straightforward? For example, Scott Pilgrim. There have been movies that told a coming-of-age story very straightforward. Michael Cera has been in some of those movies where they, you know, have some asshole learn his lesson, become a better person, and it's a more realistic setting, it's a more conventionally shot film. So my question is, why look stylized? Why go for the stylized look in the first place, as opposed to something clear?
I believe Jeff Levitt would like to go first in answering this question.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks, Colin. Thank you for that fucking introduction. Thanks for giving me permission to speak. White people.
You're welcome.
Am I right, Chowder? Am I right? We're all white except for Chowder. So anyway, my answer to that question largely would be, like, I think that a big part of it is actually just to distinguish from other narrative forms, but I also feel like it's kind of not necessarily that they want to tell narratives in different ways, but they want to focus on, like, a film as an object other than just a way to convey narrative. So it's like it's taking film and focusing on it as art. Not all of the stylistic elements of Scott Pilgrim, not all of the weird camera choices made with Wes Anderson have to be directly connected back to the story. It's just like it sets a certain tone that the narrative works with, but it's like it's taking an emphasis sort of off of the narrative fully.
Yeah, well, because then then it's not really appealing to your sensible side. It's appealing to your emotional side, which draws you in way more a lot of the time.
Yeah, I would agree. The other thing is also about like doing visual stuff like this is when it's subtle like this, when it's fantastic like this, it's more than just a story. It becomes like mythology. And you can learn more and absorb more through a medium like that than you can possibly learn from, hey, but because I can say to you a bunch of inspirational things that happened, but you might not be inspired by them unless I really...
Something about the flag or something about a polecat at the end too. I kind of lost track.
Yeah.
that's a good point, Keenan, because I feel like in Scott Pilgrim, it does kind of have more of that. It's got that fable-y vibe to it, not...
Yeah, no, that mythological.
Area fable, like the actual word fables, right? Because it's like, even with the little narrations that they have thrown in where they introduce each character with like Scott, age 22 or 23 in the comics. I don't know why they made that change. And like, say like rating awesome.
To appeal to 22-year-olds like me.
Rating level, awesome or whatever, right? Like they're introducing in sort of ways, and they'll be like, oh, it was a day and Scott Pilgrim started to date a high schooler, right? They'll introduce it in a way as if they're telling a important story to teach you a lesson, as if you were hearing like, oh, like Little Red Riding Hood was doing this thing. I feel like that's kind of the vibe that Wes Anderson goes with a lot of his movies as well, is that it's sort of like introducing this stupid ass story as if it's like this big important event that's supposed to teach you all these things, that's like put in children books and stuff like that. It fits very well in the opening of like in the Royal Tenenbaums, like it actually starts with a book that they open, and that's like really the aesthetic of it.
I would argue, though, when it comes to Wes Anderson, one of the things I really like is that the way it feels almost like the story doesn't actually matter.
Yeah.
It's character driven. So really, you never really like care about the story. It's usually the characters, but it's also because of the way they set it up through their visuals and through the style of Wes Anderson that you can have that connection to the characters and allow yourself to not care about the story.
Yeah, I mean, I would kind of argue that, in to some extent, that's a very similar thing with Scott Pilgrim.
Jeff, can I jump in? One last point that I was thinking of making too is actually, I know that we're talking about visual storytelling here and that your focus is mostly the video game aesthetic. Really, the most stuff that actually drives the narrative forward in the movie was not actually video game related. Those normally, like, those sold little moments, the Zelda sounds, the scores, the coins, were all, like, vague. Oh, this feels like a video game. Most of the visuals that actually propelled the narrative were kind of just general, like, white text over the black blocks. Like Jeff, what you said, like, Scott, 22 years old, awesome. It's mostly little things like that and just creative cuts and pans that really don't refer back to another thing, but are actually wholly original. And I found that going to Keenan's point about Jeff's domain with Wes Anderson and how it draws you in with this style, I think that that's what sells the movie to a lot of people. But if we're looking at actual mechanics, kind of like Minecraft story mode to drive the story forward, most of that actually I think falls back to pretty mundane stuff used in creative ways.
You know, this makes me think of something I mentioned in the last episode we recorded, where I talked about impact versus clarity and like the balancing act you gotta play. If you're clear, you can reel in a wider audience, but if you want impact, you need to narrow that audience. But in narrowing that audience, you can achieve like a more emotional effect. I think that's what we've been discussing. Like, these visuals are there so that it has that emotional impact.
Emotional impact was my nickname in high school.
In choosing a visual style that's different from the standard, are you doomed to limiting your audience? Take Scott Pilgrim, for example. If you aren't familiar with indie music, if you aren't familiar with video game language, comic book language, you might miss out on truly enjoying Scott Pilgrim. And I think that was...
I can answer that question.
Yep.
The answer is yes. As determined by Scott... As determined by Scott Pilgrim's box office performance. It's a critical darling, but it didn't reach a broad audience. It's kind of a cult classic now.
Stupidly good for, like, a cult classic, though, let's be honest.
Oh, it's excellent. I love it.
But, I mean, okay, but the overarching thing I would like to say about that particular point, though, is, like, I don't know, it's sort of like picking your audience in a way where it's, like, you're choosing to be loved by some and hated by others instead of choosing to be, like, kind of appreciated by most. You know what I'm saying?
You know... Do you think we made that mistake by putting the word geek in the name of our podcast?
Shut up.
I think we have. Let's move on to the ratings now. Each of the three representatives will rate Scott Pilgrim versus the World out of 5 coins. After that, I will give an award to one of the three of them. It's like basically being a gold star student for doing the best job in the discussion.
Oh, Chowder, I got butterflies.
Fuck off! Stop stealing people's jokes after we record things!
And that rating will be a flaming sword.
the power of in-depth analysis.
Hey.
I was hoping you were going to say self-respect so I could totally not deserve it.
I was hoping you were saying like the power of Chowder's love.
I love pulling Chowder's love out of my chest. Or a day.
Or on your chest. Or your lower back. Whatever, right?
I just have him dump it right on my chest and I smear it over like a cream.
Oh, I don't know. I like to just swallow it. That's my choice. The sword, his love, whatever. Right?
I don't want to think about gargling chowder liquid, okay?
Jeff, have you never had chowder before?
You mean like the soup?
Bowl.
Oh my god.
It's funny because chowder is a soup.
Anyway, I will go first. I would give Scott Pilgrim 3 coins and some change. I felt that just because of the way they limit themselves so much by the style, is that if you don't have a vague idea of video games, you really can't relate to it. And I personally think that's a bit of a flaw with some things.
I'm going to give it 5 coins, but they're not quarters, they're dimes. Because I love the movie Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim is 5 quarters to me. I felt like I had some general disagreements with the application of our visual storytelling topic. So I'm going to give you some dimes. That's, according to the movie, not enough for the bus ride home. And I am sorry you're stuck out in the cold chowder. But that's what it's going to be. 5 hollow coins from my heart.
Okay.
This song is called I Am Sad, So Very, Very Sad.
Wow. Fucking savage. Okay. I didn't realize we were giving these coins to Chowder. I thought we were critiquing the movie.
I actually feel a little hurt right now. I'm wounded. Like a sword through the chest, you know?
Yeah, that's not a great metaphor, though, because the sword through the chest was a good thing in the movie, Chowder. Come on.
Accidental compliment. I'll take it.
No, don't you remember when Gideon, like, stabbed Scott through the back and, like, the sword came out of his chest? I'm talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
There's a duplicitous nature to
it. Chowder. 1 out of 3 swords in the chest were bad. So really, I don't see, like, that's pretty good odds. I'll take that. I will take those odds of being stabbed.
Okay. Personally, I'm going to stick with 4 out of 5 coins. Don't take this personally, Chowder, because I don't think we should be taking 4 out of 5 coins personally. I'm just sick of y'all fucks wasting 5 coins on everything. I'm waiting for something that blows me out of the water to give 5 coins. But I love Scott Pilgrim, so I'm going to give him 4 coins, which is pretty much going to be my maximum for a while.
I'm going to defend giving Scott Pilgrim itself 5. I absolutely adore this movie through and through.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. Ooh. I love this movie, and I wish I had found the comics earlier so I could read more of them instead of reading half of them during this recording and not listening to you guys.
I really recommend it. I really do. It's a great series of comics.
Yeah, I'm going to continue reading it because it's really interesting to see these same events happen in different ways and to see how the characters are characterized differently, because like Scott Pilgrim is just kind of like, I don't know, he's not a Michael Cera douche in the comics. He's just kind of a douche.
And now to give the flaming sword.
I'll take your flaming sword any day, baby.
What just happened? You were just being weird about gargling chowder.
Wow, that's getting cut. No way that's staying. Or maybe we'll just bleep it. I don't know.
The person who's earned the flaming sword is... drumroll.
No, this is going to sound so bad on the mic.
Jeff Blevitt has earned the power of in-depth analysis.
Yeah.
+3 to intelligence, +2 to perception, -4 to charisma.
Story of my life.
Story of my life. Damn it.
That was my nickname in high school. -4 to charisma.
Keenan, you were pretty close, but...
I was about to say, like, he built off a lot of my points.
But Colin, you were nowhere near.
Chowder, if I was nicer to your choice of theme, would I have been a contender?
No.
This next one's called We Hate You, Please Die.
Thank you for listening. I'm Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, and that was Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. You can check out both the movie and the comic books on Amazon.com. I highly recommend it. The movie, the comics, I hold those near and dear to my heart, and I would recommend it. I think people who enjoy video games and comics would enjoy. Next week's episode will be hosted by Jeff Levitt, and his topic will be on Godzilla.
Oh, the ones that I'm having people watch, the original 1954 Gojira, the Japanese version, and I'm having them watch Godzilla King of the Monsters, which is from 1956.
If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review. If you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com.
This episode was sponsored by a tiger with a hat who lives by the highway inside my closet.
Oh, Odo, do you want to get in on this?
The cat?
We got a podcat.
Ah, sweet, podcat. That'll score us some podcat points on the internet.
Sounds like you said podcat.
That is, podcat.
Podcat. Said,
he's our pod. Yeah, he's the podcat.
Yeah.
He's just like a floating ball of cat.
All right.